From your fryer to the table, it's a quick trip for crispy fries. But how about a crosstown delivery? McCain SureCrisp fries are designed to go from fryer to container to carrier to passenger seat across town during rush hour down a shortcut that wasn't all that short to a doorstep before they hit the table. And that first bite, the crispiness speaks for itself.
Mmm.
To the last bite, McCain SureCrisp fries go the distance. See how far our fries can take your business at surecrisp.com/delivery.
Yes, you are. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Good Shepherd in for the great JR Sport Brief right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Number to join us for usual, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Shout out to the YouTube chat as well. Thank you to Samter, Cap, and of course, the great Ryan Botcher for making that continuously happen whenever I'm able to get the privilege and good fortune to step in during the week. And we can stream for the 4 hours that we are live every single show. And so it's just another way for you to interact with us, to get your comments, your insights, your positions, your opinions be heard. We will give you an update on this Yankees and Red Sox game. This has been, without question, a pitching duel. You have two of the winningest pitchers in all of baseball in Max Fried and Garrett Crochet, certainly living up to the regular seasons that they had. And if not for an Anthony Volpe blast, a solo one at that in the second inning, we are having a scoreless game heading into the top of the seventh, which we currently find ourselves in. Aaron Judge looking to rewrite the narrative that he cannot perform in the postseason, getting off to a really good start, 1 of 3. That would be great for most guys, but that is what Aaron Judge was hitting this particular regular season, winning the batting title by 20 freaking points. That's why he is the MVP, among many other reasons. We'll get to that maybe a little bit later in the show. The one game that we have not talked about before we get back to the busy phone lines is the Dodgers hosting the Reds later tonight. And that, of course, is going to be in a little less than an hour from now. I think that's going to be a great series. I think the Reds being in the postseason, first time in more than a decade that they have been in the postseason in a 162-game schedule. I think it's very impressive that Terry Francona does this, by the way, in year number one. You talk about a Hall of Fame manager, first ballot at that, what he was able to pull off with the Red Sox as the Red Sox look to get a hit and now runners on the corners with, oh, no, he took second and he's safe. Wow. So you got runners on second and third now with just one out in the top of the seventh inning. Certainly, this could be the most crucial point of the game, especially in a 1-0 game. We'll keep you posted on that. Now, the Reds, no one thought they were going to be able to sustain their particular, you know, race with the Mets. The Mets have the highest payroll in all of baseball, and you credit Ellie De La Cruz. You know, he is a superstar on the base path, you know, finishing with 22 home runs, 86 RBIs. He's really their star player. He's their marquee guy. But they got TJ Friedel. They have Spencer Steer. They have Austin Hayes. They got a lot of good young players on this particular squad. The problem is you're going against the Dodgers team that has just too much talent. They're too loaded and they're too experienced. Freddie Freeman, all 36 years of him, he's still a team leader in batting average with .295. You saw Mookie Betts struggle early on in the season, still ends up with 20-plus home runs and 20-plus doubles on the year. And then Shohei Ohtani, a virtual lock for the National League MVP, doesn't end up with 54 home runs like he did in year number one. He ends up with 55. Keep in mind, no Dodger outside of Shohei Ohtani in the illustrious history of the Brooklyn and Los Angeles Dodgers has ever hit 50 home runs or more in a season. Shohei has now done that in his only 2 years in Los Angeles. Something tells me there's going to be a third or fourth season of him getting to that particular mark. And when you talk about what they're going to do on the mound, whether it's Snell, whether it's someone like a Yamamoto, whether it's potentially Clayton Kershaw, you know they are stacked when it comes to pitching as well. Glasnow, can't forget him. So the Dodgers, they just have way too much for the Reds to really be able to withstand. It's an amazing story that the Reds got to this point of the postseason. Damn it! Red Sox scored, didn't they? They scored twice. Dang it! That's not nice. You're supposed to let the Yankees win, at least game one, right?
No, it's better storyline.
For you?
Back against the wall.
the bullpen fails again, yet they traded for two guys who are supposed to be key and they didn't use them.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Who got the big hit?
Masataka Yoshida, who actually was having potential future question marks starting the year because he had the bad knee or shoulder.
Right.
So he was not even playing the first few months, and he really lost his role because he can't play defense.
When they took out Max, do you like when they gave the hook to Max Fried when they did?
Yes, 104 pitches for a guy who has blister concerns and sometimes has forearm concerns, especially when he retired the lefty and Jaron Duran. You bring in your probably second most reliable guy behind Bednar.
You don't let him finish.
No,
the inning. No,
no, especially not because you're nearing the top of the order, and it's. The lefty-righty matchup is not always preferable when the third time through.
This is disappointing. I'll tell you who's not going to have the performance of a Max Fried. That is Hunter Green on the mound for the Reds. You know he's going to give up a run or two against LA, winning just four games since the month of May. It's going to be a tough spot for him. So we'll see how this ultimately plays out. Dave Roberts, a question for you about your mindset. What is it heading into game number one?
Being at home, not having to travel, it's important for us to strike early and really not let these guys kind of hang around and gain confidence. And, you know, like I've talked about edge and just keeping our edge.
Well, you know, speaking of edge, you know, you are someone that has two World Series titles to your name as a manager alone. We'll never forget about that incredible stolen base you had on Mariano Rivera in the ALCS to ultimately proved to be the game-tying run, ends up coming back down 0-3 in that series against the Yankees. You know about dangerous teams. You certainly were one in your playing days. You have been as a manager multiple times out. Cincinnati, though, there's no expectations for them once they got to the playoffs. They're almost playing with house money. Is that what makes them such a dangerous team?
The youthful enthusiasm, the naivete, there's not a lot of experience, and I think that sometimes it happens so quick that they're just riding a wave. And I think a way to combat that is we have to not take them lightly because it's a really good ball club and they played their way into the postseason.
Is he speaking from a shower, Botcher?
So I have to question sometimes the MLB press conferences.
Right.
Because there is very, very few clean recordings in the MLB for a league that should be posting a lot of social media content. They really don't. So you have to like scour YouTube and other secondary sources to find any type of audio.
Yeah. I mean, it's only the team looking to become the first ever organization this century to win back-to-back World Series championships, happened to be the second biggest market in the country, happened to be the second most storied franchise in baseball history. No disrespect to the St. Louis Cardinals or San Francisco Giants. But, you know, I mean, they can sound like they're coming from an echo in an attic. Number to join us, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. How many of y'all believe that the Dodgers are going to make the Cincinnati Reds look like a minor league squad, given the disparity of talent between the two teams? And what has been your biggest impression so far of day number one in the wild card round? Let's get to our busy phone lines. Let's get to Alex in Miami. Alex, always appreciate the patience. How you doing, my friend? And what you got for us on the MLB?
Hey, Shep, what's up? I've never been happier to get deemed the person that goes pick up the dog at the groomer, because when I was going to pick him up, I put on SiriusXM due to the fact that I'm tired of listening to music all day.
Right.
And you were on. What a surprise.
Hey, you know, it's a pleasant surprise. Always good to be in for JR. And I tell you, Alex, there is a lot going on in sports right now, man. You got four baseball playoff games. You got the WNBA, Nafisha Caller, making a statement and putting Kathy Engelbert on blast, the WNBA commissioner. You have a Monday Night Football recap. Congratulations to you and your Dolphins for looking really solid on offense and having a defense that I thought was really impressive through the first three quarters. I know you got to be feeling somewhat good about your Dolphins, given what we saw in week four. And remember, they're playing Cleveland. They're playing, you know, a beat up offensive line in the Chargers. They have a very favorable schedule these next three games.
Well, originally I wanted the Dolphins to go 0-17. So I'm not really too happy that they won, because what they need to do is try to accrue as much draft capital as they
can.
The thing is that going forward, they can't trust Chris Greer to make those selections, and they can't trust Mike McDaniel to develop the players that they're going to draft. So they're going to have to make some household changes, and we'll leave it at that.
That's fair. No, that's a fair point. But I'm telling you, man, Carolina, Cleveland, a banged-up offensive line, Los Angeles Chargers, you know, this is a very winnable three games for them. They could very much be 4-4, and then they have a whole new season if that's the point. So we'll see what happens with that. But what stood out to you the most so far about the MLB playoffs?
I'll tell you what. I think pitching, it's been I figured it was going to be like this because everybody's throwing their number ones.
Right.
But pitching has really stood out. But what stood out to me the most is Tarek Skubal's performance. I think it was a stellar performance, a performance for the ages where he struck out 14. And he really proved why, to me, he's probably the best pitcher in baseball, definitely the best pitcher in the American League.
You know, it's funny because people were questioning him in the month of September. You know, he only had one win, and he finished 13-6 on the season. And there were a lot of questions as to whether he was slowing down and fading and whether he would be that guy. And what does he do? He comes out and records a record 14 strikeouts in the wild card round in a single game. That has never been done before, ever. To your point, he was lights out. A season-best 107 pitches. There wasn't anything he couldn't do on the mound. And he was throwing gas and he was throwing fireworks in the later innings, in the 6th, 7th, and 8th, for him to strike out five guys in a row as if he's as fresh as a daisy. You have to love that if you're Detroit. And this team had a colossal meltdown. Losing and squandering this division to the Guardians was an historic drop-off. It was an historic letdown. And you know what? One game can change an entire season. And that's exactly what happened to the Tigers. And they are back in the driver's seat. All they got to do is win two of the next three. Or excuse me, I should say just one of the next two. And they move on. When a lot of people felt when they had that 7-20 skid in the end of September, they weren't going to have a shot in prayer to make noise in the postseason.
Definitely. Now they have a lot of momentum going forward in the series. And usually the person that wins the first game in wild card series takes a series. I think it's something 80% or above chance of winning the series according to the prior statistics.
Wow.
So that's good for Detroit.
That's it. That's a heck of a stat, man. Alex, just very quickly, I know that we didn't you didn't call about this, but have you ever seen a professional superstar athlete call out their commissioner while both are active?
No, I've never seen it before, but I think she was on point. I think she did the right thing. You know. I think that the WNBA players are underappreciated, and they should be appreciated more. And I think it's ridiculous the amount of money that they're making, especially Caitlin Clark. You know, all the money that lady generates for the WNBA compared to the amount of money she's making is something ridiculous, something uncalled for. And the fact that they say that, no, she makes $60 million a year thanks to the WNBA, her endorsements are her endorsements, and that has nothing to do with the fact that she's probably the most underpaid athlete in the world.
That's really well said. Really well said, Alex. Always a pleasure to hear from you, brother. We'll talk over the weekend. You enjoy the first round of these wild card baseball games.
Thank you, sir. Are you on again this week? Any more bonus shepherds?
No. Tuesday is the only bonus shepherd. Yes.
I was asking for one favor. The next time there's a bonus shepherd, give me a heads up. Text me or something. Just let me know because you caught me off guard, and I would have been really upset if I would have missed this edition.
You're on Twitter. You see me posting, right?
Yeah, but I get so many tweets up. To be honest with you.
Oh, look at you.
I really.
Okay.
I really can't.
All right. Well, you know, I'll make sure on my agenda, let Alex know every time I'm hosting. No, that sounds good, brother. Always good to hear from you in Miami, and glad you were able to catch the show. You know, I bring up Nafisha Collier because this is going to be the major talking point with a lot of sports enthusiasts, and this is going to overshadow the postseason, at least in the wild card round, and it's going to overshadow what took place in Monday Night Football for the next 24 hours, for a superstar player, an individual that is five-time All-WNBA, could have easily been the MVP this year. That, of course, went to Asia Wilson. For her to use her platform, use her notoriety, use her fame, use her reputation as not just one of the faces of the WNBA, but to do that also as one of the leaders of the Players Union, for her to call out her commissioner, not just to say this is where the league can do better, but calling the leadership the worst. I mean, she was not mincing any words. She was not holding back. And you have to respect someone who is going to bat for more than just her own desires and her own interests. That was clearly a message on behalf of the players, on behalf of the coaches. And, you know, to me, and this is just my opinion, I don't know anything factually, but I'm going to take her for her word. And I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt that Kathy Engelbert did have those statements about Caitlin Clark. And what she essentially said about Caitlin Clark was, what Alex was referencing, if there's no WNBA, there's no Caitlin Clark. And that just tells me how misguided she is as not just a leader, but as a human being. If you don't think Caitlin Clark has overshadowed the WNBA and has single-handedly brought that league to unprecedented heights, you have been living under a rock. Botcher, you and JR do a great evening show every single weeknight. Truth Serum, how often have you spoken about the WNBA the last 2 months?
I would say a handful of times. I would say probably five, because Angel Reese had the issue where she called out her team.
Sure.
And then on top of that, there were some just debates just about how the refs are taking care of the players. And that's what Collier is talking about, how the refs have been inconsistent. So it was mainly talking about how Sophie Cunningham was yelling at the refs, saying that they don't do their job well. So it's just a bunch of things that are not... To say the coverage of the WNBA has gone down is true. When Clark went down with the groin injury and the hamstring, it was over. There was an obvious nobody cares anymore.
Botcher, tell me if you agree with this. There's a Michael Jordan effect where the person who has their grandma or grandpa in Montana or Iowa or Washington, they may not know anything about the league, but they know who Caitlin Clark is. And it's the same thing that could be said about the NBA in the golden age in the 80s. You didn't necessarily know the storylines in the NBA, but you knew who Michael Jordan was. You knew who Michael Jordan was because he was a commercial appeal and he had a crossover effect. He crossed over and transcended sports. Caitlin Clark transcends sports. And when Kathy comes out with this statement that she doesn't think that Caitlin Clark would be relevant and should be on her hands and knees thanking her for the deal that she has made, is she not aware of the draft coverage that the league got in 2024 when they more than tripled up any other draft coverage in the history of the WNBA? Was she not aware when Ice Cube offered her a $5 million deal annually to play for the Big Three? How does she not know this?
Also, how do you not watch her two, I guess you could say her junior and senior year at Iowa, where she was the headline?
Right.
Where she went up against Angel Reese, beat Angel Reese, and then lost in the championship. And then on top of that, the year after that, or she lost to Angel Reese in the championship.
Yeah, I
the
say
other way around.
Yeah, right.
So she lost to Angel Reese.
Because Kim Mulkey won it with LSU that year.
Yep. And then the next year with Van Lith, they didn't.
Yeah, South Carolina, Dawn Staley beat them.
Beat Iowa.
Yeah.
But either way, there was a storyline there between the stare down between Reese and Clark and the pointing to the ring finger. There was so much attention on women's basketball and Caitlin Clark and her name way before she got to the WNBA. I would even argue that when Clark has been in the WA and WNBA and on, her coverage has declined. I think people have started to care less about Caitlin Clark once she got into the WNBA.
Interesting.
And I don't know if it's because she's been hurt or she just has not played well.
Well, the ratings, commercial ratings, gate revenue, attendance, merchandise, they were all at an all-time high by a mile in 2024. To your point, I think she's only played 11 games this year. And, you know, she's been in and out of the lineup and then missed the last couple months. to your point, the ratings, yeah, they've suffered drastically. There's no face of the sport. Asia Wilson, as great as she is, if you played a soundbite of Asia Wilson, I don't think half our audience would recognize and be able to discern the voice. Because as great as Asia Wilson is, she's not marketable. And that's not to say that she's not a superstar, and that's not to say that she couldn't be marketable, but they don't market her. When's the last time you saw an Asia Wilson commercial? When is the last time you saw Asia Wilson on a network television platform? When is the last time you saw Asia Wilson do any kind of cameo? You know you can do that with Caitlin Clark. You know all you got to say is State Farm and you think of Caitlin Clark. You know you say Taylor Swift, the biggest star in the world, and she's friends with Caitlin Clark. They interact in the same circles because you see CeCe all the time at these football games. She has a crossover appeal that there has never, ever been from anyone else in WNBA history. That includes Diana Taurasi, Lisa Leslie, Shamika Holtzclaw, Sue Bird, Cynthia Cooper, Cheryl Swoops, Sabrina Ionescu, Brianna Stewart. No one has ever had this type of crossover appeal. And if anybody should be getting on their hands and knees to thank anyone, it should be Kathy Engelbert thanking the living you-know-what out of Caitlin Clark for making them put on the A-list block for all these sports shows, because they knew Caitlin Clark was going to draw a reaction, not just because of her play, not just because of her skill set and her God-given talent, but how she conducts herself and possesses herself. And for Kathy Engelbert to not even be in communication with Nafisa Collier when she is making these claims about the league is an insult to anyone's intelligence. And this whack statement she has after the fact, making it appear like she does sympathize and she does want to get it right, there is not a shred of accountability and wrongdoing. And that just tells me this is someone that believes they are in the right and they ain't going to change their ways for 1 second. But it doesn't diminish Nafisa Collier for coming out and saying what she said. I can't recall a superstar of a sport doing that before against an active commissioner. Good on her for using her platform. Number to join us, 888-710-4ISN. That is 888-710-4476. We know we got people that want to weigh in on this particular back and forth between Kathy Engelbert and, of course, Nafisa Collier, and certainly want to talk Caitlin Clark. We will get to your calls on the other side. We will certainly preview Thursday night football this hour as well and give you an update on Yankees Red Sox. So much more to do on the Vizzy Good Shepherd filling in for JR right here on the Infinity Sports Network. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's David Shepherd.
Welcome back, everybody. David Shepherd in for the great JR Sport Brief. You can always follow me at Shep on Air. This Red Sox-Yankees game, instant pitching classic. You have Boston Red Sox with two huge runs scored in the top of the seventh inning. And the Yankees have not had a hit since the bottom of the second as we head to the bottom of the eighth inning with the Yankees desperate to do anything. This would be such a horrible loss considering you had your ace, Max Fried, go out there, give you 6 1/3 scoreless innings, and the Yankees coming into this game winning 8 straight, averaging over 6 runs per game over the last 12 games, on again an 8-game winning streak, to have just one run through 7 innings, very disappointing. Let's get to Kevin, who has been patient in Baltimore. Kevin, good to hear from you, buddy. What do you have for us, sir?
What's going on, Shep?
How are you, Kevin?
Doing great, my man. Great show, brother.
Thanks, man.
So I just called in. I thought it was kind of funny. It was probably really the first time I ever felt like I had a WNBA comment for you.
Well, let's hear that WNBA comment.
You know, from Baltimore, the only reason I do know Angel Reese is because she's from here, of course.
Right.
Caitlin Clark's global. But honestly, all the men that I talk to about, I've ever heard talk about WNBA,
yeah, Kevin, you're breaking up a little bit, but I get the gist of what you're saying. You're essentially, kind of agreeing with my premise, which is the only reason we've even brought up the WNBA for the most part the last couple years has been because of the ascension, because of the popularity, because of the boom that Caitlin Clark gave the sport, because of the sparks she was able to provide. And to dismiss her as anything other than the face of the league is nonsense.
Yeah, I would never dispute that. Shep ever, brother. Never.
Yeah, that sounds good, Kevin. Well, hey, listen, man, we appreciate the phone call in Baltimore, and let's hope your Ravens actually win a game and not start the season 1-4. Sound good?
Yes, sir, man. We're hurt real bad, though, brother. Pray for us.
We'll do, Kevin. It's good to hear from you in Baltimore. And actually, while I'm at it, let me do this live. Let me check Jackson's hamstring. What's the latest?
2 to 3 weeks, according to reports.
Yeah, geez, thanks for being so on top of that. 2 to 3 weeks, because I've heard different things. Baltimore Sun obviously coming out with that, so I'm glad you verified that. By the way, before we get to your sports flash, what are you most looking forward to about these particular 2025 MLB playoffs?
Whether the gutty Brewers can turn their playoff fortunes around, whether the Mariners can make Cal Raleigh's season stand up and their pitching as well.
Sure.
I would say those are the two things. You know, I was rooting for the Guardians. That was a great game today.
Yes.
Well pitched. All these games have been superb pitching performances so far.
You said that in your update. I agree with you 1,000%. Skubal looking like the best pitcher in all of baseball.
Yeah.
14 strikeouts, 7 1/3 inning, 107 pitches. To boot, Detroit 7-20 in the month of September. We didn't think they'd take a game in this particular wild card round at Progressive Field. They end up getting game one.
That's the importance of an ace. Can't underscore that.
And the Yankees are going to botch this performance, by the way.
No, they still have six outs to play with.
Act, they haven't gotten a hit since the second.
I'm well aware. I'm about to mention that in the update.
There you go. Number to join us, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. By the way, getting a little better about tossing. I'm early these days. I mean, this is pretty impressive.
Well, technically, you're a minute 48 late at this point.
All right, then I got to get to it. I got to get to it then and shut my mouth up. When we get back, we will certainly discuss Thursday night football, because that is going to be a very exciting game between two California teams, 49ers and Rams. We'll give you the latest on that. Before we do anything else, let's get to our latest sports flash with the always jovial Richard Ackerman.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's David Shepherd.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Good Shepherd in for JR right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Great to be with you, however and wherever you may be listening from. I'm looking forward to week 5 in the NFL. We'll certainly hit on the Rams and 49ers momentarily. I do want to say this about the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills have themselves a back-to-back MVP in Josh Allen. With Lamar Jackson going out with the hamstring injury for a couple of weeks now, there is not a more dominant quarterback playing the position. Josh Allen is going to be 5-0 after Sunday Night Football. He is certainly going to be someone that I believe has just one interception after 5 weeks. And he's a human video game out there. He is a human joystick. If you think you're going to stop him, he's just going to hand it off to James Cook, who himself is having a career year, well on pace to rush for over 1,500 yards, which would completely obliterate any career high he has had in previous seasons. There's something about this particular Buffalo Bills team. When they came back down 15 points against the Baltimore Ravens in that fourth quarter with less than 4 minutes to go, when they were able to accomplish that, it changed everything for them. And they have not even had one game this year where they have won and it hasn't been double digits. They're not having any close calls anymore, which just tells you how locked in this team is, looking to ultimately be the first number one seeded Buffalo Bills team this century representing the AFC. And you know the ultimate fitting way to close out their final year at Highmark Stadium would be to win the franchise's first Super Bowl, and it helps when you have a back-to-back MVP in Josh Allen. I also want to make sure that we talk about Justin Fields, and as most of you know, they will be hosting the Dallas Cowboys. I saw a lot of good things from Justin Fields. I saw accuracy. I saw an incredible ability to escape the pocket when the blitz was coming. I saw Justin Fields go for 43 yards, coming out of a blitz, running the opposite way, going untouched, and making it look like he was doing a warm-up jog. that's the kind of dominance that you see from Justin Fields with his legs on the football field. And then you saw that incredible pinpoint accurate pass to Garrett Wilson to get that to within a 6-point game. You saw them put up 18 points in the second half against Miami in Miami. Clearly, he knows how to run a high-octane offense. You just got to make the right calls for Justin Fields. And I believe the Jets are going to do that in week number 5. I don't believe they're going to have 13 self-inflicted costly penalties. I don't believe they're going to have 3 turnovers, and it will be the first victory for Gangrene this season. And all it's going to continue to reinforce and embolden for me is that they have themselves a legitimate franchise quarterback playing for New York. Speaking of legitimate franchise quarterbacks, you do realize that Philadelphia against the Denver Broncos, they're going to be 5-0 after week number 5. And you talk about Jalen Hurts just strictly as a winner. The dude has a higher win percentage than Peyton Manning for both respective careers, a 5-time regular season MVP, Peyton Manning. And Jalen Hurts' first 2 years in the NFL, he had a losing record. That just tells you and highlights the kind of tear that he has been on these last 4 years with 2 Super Bowl appearances and counting, because I believe the Eagles do find their way back. And it's no accident that throughout the entire offseason, we were so busy discussing Aaron Rodgers. We were talking about all the holdouts, whether it was TJ Watt, whether it was someone like a Terry McLaurin, and we didn't focus, and rightfully so, on the reigning Super Bowl champions. And then we came out with this bogus ranking of Jalen Hurts not even being one of the top 8 quarterbacks. So far, he is proving to be, along with Jared Goff, the best quarterback this season in the NFC. You bring back every single one of your previous players that made an All-Pro in 2024, and there's a reason why the Eagles are going to start 5-0 this particular year. Jalen Hurts playing like a man possessed, and the worst thing you could have done to that man was rank him a lot lower than where he should have been. And speaking of quarterbacks ranked in the top 10, you got to love the performance so far of the 37-year-old Matthew Stafford. Now, you saw that incredible play to Otwell at the end of the game, 88 yards to ultimately finish off the Indianapolis Colts. That was an incredible throw and catch from Stafford. But what you also see from the Rams, what makes them so potent, is they have a red zone threat, a touchdown threat, that even in the heyday of Cooper Kupp, they have not had so far with Matthew Stafford, and that is, of course, in the form of Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams has 3 touchdown passes in his last 3 games heading into week 5, and then you got some individual named Puka Nacua, and all he's done is lead every single wide receiver in receiving yards by more than 100. Matthew Stafford is so freaking good at throwing the football and is such a prolific passer that he doesn't even need to be mobile, and he is still a legitimate Super Bowl contending quarterback at the age of 37. And I know that the Rams come in with Sean McVay just 5-10 against Kyle Shanahan in his respective career, but I do believe the Rams are going to get the best of the 49ers. Brock Purdy still looking like he's playing through that toe injury. You talk about the 49ers just reeling right now. I love seeing Christian McCaffrey back and healthy. I don't see the same burst. I don't see the same separation from defenders like I saw in 2023. He's still very much a top-tier running back, but he's not quite the dual threat I remember witnessing in 2023. So I like the Rams' chances very much so to go 4-1. And you talk about Kyren Williams, he's top 6 in rushing yards this year, so they can beat you in every which way, that being the Los Angeles Rams, and I very much like their chances against the 49ers. I'm not seeing the same healthy Brock Purdy that I saw at the beginning of season number 2, when he probably could have won the 49ers the Super Bowl had Kyle Shanahan been paying attention to what the overtime rules actually consist of. Botcher, I just laid a lot out there in terms of the NFL in week number 5. So far to you, who has been the MVP and what matchup are you most looking forward to as we head into week number 5?
At this point, I think you have to give the MVP to Josh Allen just because of his team's dominance and his pursuit dominance again. But I'm going to say, but if the Chiefs can continue to play like they did last week, Mahomes would be on track to get some MVP votes. Just, I don't know if it was, you know, the Ravens just getting way too hurt.
Right.
Or he likes Xavier Worthy. He's getting Rashee Rice back this week. It's just, if they can keep it up and Mahomes proves that he can be a 2019 version of himself, there will be MVP calls for Patrick Mahomes.
For sure. Because you don't have Rashee Rice, your best receiver for the first six games of the season. Mr. Swift, a.k.a. Travis Kelce, has not quite looked the same this year. So I'm with Botcher 100%. And you know, I don't know where that he stands after week four. I know week three, Patrick Mahomes, at 30 years old, had the most rushing yards of any single quarterback. And that's saying something, because Patrick Mahomes, while he is certainly a dual threat, he's not a guy who's going to be known for taking off and giving you 70, 80 yards per game like a Josh Allen, like a Jaden Daniels, like a Lamar Jackson, like a Jalen Hurts. And if I look at who is leading right now among all quarterbacks, okay, it's Jalen Hurts followed by Justin Fields. Wow. Okay, so Mahomes got it. So he's still top four. It's pretty impressive for a guy that's done as much as he has done, taking the beating that he has taken in so many late runs into the postseason, and that after week three, he was leading everybody in rushing yards. Patrick Mahomes, without question, is the best quarterback of this generation. And let's be honest, it almost becomes like a Michael Jordan thing where you feel like you could give the MVP award to Patrick Mahomes every single year, but you got to keep the story novel and you got to spice things up. Something that did not sit well with me. Botcher, did you hear that Bruce Bochy will not return as the Texas Rangers manager?
I saw that. I was thinking personally there's one of two options. He got his ring in Texas.
Sure.
And he's like, this team has no future. I'm going to retire and step away from managing every day. Or,
yeah,
I was like, the big or is the conspiracy. I don't mean conspiracy theorist here. The timing of
Bob Melvin. Yep.
And Bruce Bochy asking to be released.
Sure.
It's just a little questionable. I think potentially if Bochy doesn't want to retire and go into the front office.
Right.
He's headed back home to San Francisco.
For sure. I don't think this was a mutual decision, because when you asked Boch what is motivating him to still do this, he gave a really recent quote of saying he still loves this. He still sees himself doing this in the future. So how do you go from that to all of a sudden resigning? And I mean, look who they were without. You know, Corey Seager. You know, Marcus Simeon, like, they had some stars that weren't even available to them, and they still made a good run of this, where they were close to making the playoffs, going 11-3, you know, at one point in the month of September. Actually, I think it was a 13-3 run. So if I'm the Rangers, and the guy comes in, and again, you had been a franchise since the 1960s, Bruce Bochy comes in, wins the World Series in year one for your first ever World Series title, got you guys to 500 with the likes of Nathan Eovaldi being out for a significant amount of time, Corey Seager, Marcus Simeon. I think it is very unfair, based on Bruce Bochy's resume, based on his even recent success in 2025, not having this team limp to the finish line despite missing multiple stars, and his partying gift is the boot. Someone that, in addition to winning your first ever World Series title, also happened to win 3 of 5 when he was the manager of the San Francisco Giants, and before that got the Padres to their last World Series appearance in 1998. You do realize that the last 60 years of Major League Baseball, the last 60 years, there has not been a manager that has won more World Series. Now, Joe Torre won 4. But when Joe Torre went to L.A., he stopped winning World Series. Bruce Bochy, like Tony La Russa, has been to multiple destinations and won multiple times. And unlike Tony La Russa, he didn't have a spiral-type finish to his managerial career. Sorry, White Sox fans. You know it's true with Tony La Russa. I don't get this decision for one second, other than, to Botcher's point, and this is not a conspiracy theory because Buster Posey, his soon-to-be first ballot Hall of Fame catcher, is the president of baseball operations. You know that's a hire he was going to make, but I don't think Bruce Bochy is the type of guy that would, and I know his contract was up, but I don't think Bruce Bochy is the type of guy that would just leave a franchise high and dry. I just think he has too many relationships in 3 years in Texas. I think that World Series in 2023, when no one gave them a fighter's chance, I just don't see him being that guy that would leave and go somewhere else at the age of 70.
Unless he personally, his relationship with them was so good that he went up to them and was straight up with them and said, hey, I know we have not been here the longest time together, but we've won, we've had success. I'd like to continue my career back where I started so I can finish up on a high note that somewhere I've been for the most of my career. So I think personally he could be straight up with them and be like, I love you guys here, but my true home is in San Francisco. Yeah, can I go back?
So, but if I'm Bochy, I'm not coming out and saying, when asked about his future, I'm so excited to still do this, and I'm so excited to be here. This is not a rookie manager. This guy knows how to win over the press and what to say and what not to say. He's not coming out with a quote that's that detail-oriented about how he feels about being in Texas, and then all of a sudden, you know, parting ways. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. And plus, I don't think at 70 years old, it behooves him to go to a whole nother place at this point of his life. I think Texas is San Francisco is great, don't get me wrong. But I just think, again, this is a risky move if I'm Bruce, if I'm really gunning for that open managerial job in San Francisco. Number to join us, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. I'm really hoping this is not the end of Bruce Bochy as a manager. When we get back, we will give you an update on this Yankees-Red Sox game, which has certainly been a pitching duel, but it's the Red Sox coming back in the seventh with two runs, maintaining that lead, heading into the bottom of the ninth. We get to your calls. So much more to do on the JR Sport Brief. Good Shepherd, we're coming right back.